Very pleasant good evening. Invite you to turn your Bibles to the book of Esther, as this is going to be the center of our last lesson of this week's effort to look at various Bible characters and to learn of their courage and seek to emulate that in our own lives, as well as other characters that we find in the various Bible characters that we've looked at, and look at the positive and the negative things of them, and seek to exemplify those things that are good and avoid those things that are wrong. We're going to do the same thing tonight, Lord's willing, as we examine this good book of Esther. One of the challenges I've had in preparing this particular lesson is knowing when to quit, you know, because there is so much material here in this book. Now, obviously, time's going to help us that, and a certain bell's going to help us with that, to know when to quit. But I just know that we're not going to be able to cover everything that could be covered in this wonderful book of Esther. And we'll seek to learn lessons not only about her, but also about those whom she found herself associated with during this period the time of this book being written. I would certainly be amiss if I didn't pause just a moment and express my sincerest and deepest heartfelt thanks to the elders here and to the congregation here for allowing me to join in this endeavor. I have been enriched by the opportunity to prepare these lessons. I have been edified by you because of the good things that you do. I've been edified by this week and the good attendance, not only by younger ones, but also older ones. Those that encourage me as well are those that struggle with their health, but have taken time to make sure that they are here, to maybe get in at the last minute and hurry up to get here. That's a good thing, because you know, there were things that in their life that they could have allowed to prevent them from coming, but they didn't do that because they wanted to be here. And that encourages me. It lifts my spirits, and it helps me to continue to strive to be faithful unto God. Appreciate Brother Brian. I'm so glad for he and his family that they're able to come home, basically, and to be with you, brethren, and glad to you have him and he has you, that you can work together, and certainly pray that good things may come. And I think he's just done a wonderful job this week in working with the young people and making the announcements at various times where, you know, I've got an outline here, and there's a lot of times he's just had to wing it, you know, kind of thing, whereby to keep in mind various things. But the best thing I thought he did was when the lights went out, you know. That was wonderful, you know. That was a very good visual application of what he was trying to present, and he did it very well. But he's done very good job throughout this week, and I've been encouraged by that as well. So I encourage you to keep on keeping on, and look to hear good things continually from the church here. I want to tell you something, then we'll get right into our lesson. This area in our wonderful state of West Virginia has a great deal to be thankful for. And you ought never to take that for granted. You can go to meetings that aren't that far away. You know, you got several churches here in the area that are seeking to speak where the Bible speaks and to be silent where the Bible is silent. And not all areas, even in our little state, have that privilege and that convenience and that commitment to have this many churches in this area that are seeking to do what's right. And so it's always encouraging when you see those from other places to support you in your effort, and you make sure that you do the same and support them in their effort, because you have wonderful opportunity to enrich your mind and spiritual things, and always be grateful for that. Well, what is exciting about the book of Esther? Well, where do we begin? First of all, I want to summarize the entire book of Esther, then come back, kind of like what we did on Sunday morning when we looked at 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, you know, read the passage, and then we came back and we looked at the various parts, then we put it all back together and hopefully had a better appreciation for it. But what I want to do here is just to summarize this book. This is going to be the Cliff's Notes method of looking at the book of Esther, and then we will come back and look at various parts, and then the lesson will close. Esther is a young lady, probably less than 20 years old, by the time you get to the end of the book, and some people think that she was probably about 14 years old when you begin at the beginning of the book. And this young lady is thrust into a setting where she ultimately had influence over one of the most powerful kings or men in the world. The man's name was King Xerxes of the world empire at that time, Persia. All of this was at an age where I read one comment one time, and I knew his point, and I'll just share it with you. He said, you know, this is an age where a girl her age was probably wanting to do girly things. You know, that's what he said. And girly things meaning those things, you know, she was might have been looking for a young man or something of this sort. But she was thrust into a situation where she had to think very maturely. And was she able to do that? When she was challenged to do that, what kind of thinking do we find that Esther exemplified? And I offer to you as you read the book, and probably everyone in here is probably most familiar with this good story, we find that she very ably exercised very mature thinking at a time where it may have been easy for her to just turn and seek to have someone else exercise her responsibilities or maybe behave in some kind of a childish sort of way. But she didn't do that. God must have seen in this young lady such to entrust her with the riches of actually being able to rescue the people of God, because she exemplified wisdom, she exemplified resourcefulness, she exemplified faith, she exemplified self-control, and oh yes, she exemplified the thing that we have studied throughout this week, which is what? Courage, didn't she? And that's absolutely what we see here in this story. The Jews had been in exile for many years in Babylon, and when power changed at the hands of the Persians, we find that they were being brought out of Babylonian captivity. In different groups were being taken. And as a result, we find that Babylon being conquered by Persia, Esther was one of the captive Israelites taken to Persia, through whom God saved the Jews from extermination. At the beginning of the story of Esther, the king of Persia is displeased with his queen, Vashti, and he removes her from her royal position. Why did he do that? Well, he had had a feast of 7 days, the king had, when his heart was merry. Not because he just thought, well, that was a good joke. He was drunk. That's why he was merry. And he sent his chamberlains in Esther chapter 1 and verse 11 and 12 to bring Vashti, the queen, before the king with the crown royal to show the people and the princes her beauty. For she was fair to look on, but the queen Vashti refused to come at the king's commandment by his chamberlains. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. So here this king's advisors, if you will, suggested that all the fairest young maidens in the land be brought to the king over a period of time, that he might choose a new queen, since he had exterminated his queen, his wife, because of Vashti's refusal to do what he had bade her to do. Well, the young Jewess, this Jewish by the name of Hadassah, whose Persian name is Esther, is among the maidens brought to the palace. And at the instance of her guardian by the name of Mordecai, she conceals her identity that she is not a Jew. She does not confess the fact or tell that she is a Jew. After winning the favor of the king, she becomes the queen. Well, meanwhile, Mordecai runs afoul of the evil one by the name of Haman, who decides in revenge to trick the king into declaring a sentence of death on all Jews in the kingdom to be carried out at a future date to be decided by the casting of a lot. Well, Mordecai learns of the plot. He in turn alerts Esther. She, at a great personal risk, decides to accept the role of confronting the king about the plot and begging on behalf of her people that the king might find mercy to spare them. And as a result, she is successful in this matter. And through a series of events, certainly by the providence of Almighty God and Esther's wise handling of the situation, Haman is shown to be the villain that he really is. And in the end, Haman is hung on the gallows that he had not prepared, obviously, for himself, but that he had prepared for Mordecai. And the Jews of the kingdom are saved from extinction. What a wonderful story. That's basically covering all those chapters in just the summary of it, of what occurred on this occasion. Look at chapter 2, and I want to read verse 5 on down through verse 9. Now remember, the book of Esther is set in the Persian Empire. It occurs after the Babylonian captivity. Actually, the book of Esther, if we had our Bibles written in chronological order in reference to date, we would find that the book of Esther would be squeezed in between over there in the book of Ezra between chapter 6 and chapter 7, after Nehemiah's return to Israel and before Ezra's return. And if you'll recall, if you looked at that, you would find that the last books of Old Testament history would actually be Ezra, Esther, Nehemiah, Malachi, you have Haggai, you have Zechariah in those. Those would actually be in chronological order, the last books, because they deal with coming out of Babylonian captivity and the restoration of Jerusalem. And if you want an exciting and interesting story, just take time to read that. It is wonderful to see the working of the prophets. It's wonderful to see the response of the people on many occasions when they responded to the teaching and all those various things. What a wonderful story within itself. And so squeezed into that is this book of Esther. And here in Esther chapter 2, beginning in verse 5, the Bible says, "Now in Shushan the palace there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shimei, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. And the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took for his own daughter. So it came to pass, when the king's commandment and his decree was heard, and when many maidens were gathered together unto Shushan, the palace, to the custody of Haggai, that Esther was brought also into the king's house to the custody of Haggai, keeper of the woman." And then lastly, "And the maiden pleased him, and she obtained kindness of him. And he speedily gave her her things for purification, with such things as belonged to her, and 7 maidens which were meet to be given her out of the king's house. And he preferred her and her maids unto the best place of the house of the women." Now, the reason why I'm mentioning this here toward the beginning of our lesson is because already we see at the very beginning of the book some traits that we want to point out toward the conclusion of our lesson about Esther. First of all, what did she look like? What's it say? She was a beautiful woman. You know, we talked about Daniel last night. You know, he evidently was an attractive young man, you know, gentleman. And here we have Esther, and she's evidently a very beautiful lady. Now, individuals at times have had, and we'll talk about this a little bit more at the end, individuals at times have used their physical countenance and their beauty in order to get advantages in unethical sort of ways. Have they not? Did Esther do that? Well, now don't answer that yet. We're going to look at that and we're going to talk about that, study about that a little bit more at the end, Lord's willing, of our lesson. But also this passage points out some others that we want to consider in our study tonight. Of course, we want to mention Esther. We want to mention Mordecai. We want to learn. We want to study a little bit about the king of Persia. We want to learn a little bit more about Haman as well. Now we're going to try and do all this tonight, you know. But we're going to touch on enough to show, to draw distinctions between this is the character of these gentlemen, but this is the character that stands out among this woman by the name of Esther. And I believe, ladies and gentlemen, that the key verses of this whole book of Esther is found over in verse 13 and 14 of Esther chapter 4. You might want to highlight this and consider it on your own as well. In Esther chapter 4, beginning in verse 13 and verse 14. Now, Mordecai on this occasion has gone to Esther and he has encouraged her. Some have say he charges her to take care of the matter pertaining to rescuing the people of God from being killed by the evil plot. He says, then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, thinking not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who know whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this. And what we see, ladies and gentlemen, in this whole thing is the providence of God working in such a way that we learned from Joseph. And you know what's amazing to me? That there is one word that is not mentioned at all in this book that you think would be mentioned. Does anybody already know the answer to that question? Boy, a lot of people know the answer. That's good. And yet you see his working throughout the book, don't you? You see that providence. And you recognize it because of the fruit that is manifested in the actions of such people as Esther and such people as Mordecai. And not only that, but also we see God's providence working when it comes to, the way of a sinner is hard, like Solomon says. When at the end of the book, you know, some ended up reaping exactly what they didn't expect. You know, they reaped what they didn't plan on reaping. You know, they had sowed something that thought somebody else was going to reap it. So we see this great book shows how God, through ordinary, beautiful people, can and does accomplish great things. Now, one of the things that we read about or we considered in our summary is found right there in Esther chapter 1 in the very beginning of that book. And that is King Ahasuerus, if you recall, Xerxes of Persia, same one, has a 6-month celebration followed by a 7-day feast. Also one hosted by his wife, Queen Vashti, for the women you find here. And down in verse 10 on down through verse 12, it says, on the seventh day when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded, and he gives all those various people, and then the 7 chamberlains that served in the presence of Ahasuerus the king, to bring Vashti. What do you want Vashti to do here on this occasion? You know, you need to clean up things, you know what? Is that what he wanted? No. He wanted her, look what it says, to show the princes, the people and the princess her beauty, for she was fair to look on. You know, get out there so though not those who are in this gathering, this party, if you will have opportunity to lust after her. He degraded her, didn't he? It kind of reminds me of what Peter said over in 1 Peter chapter 3, beginning in verse 7. He says, "Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife." Was there any honor in what he was doing here? Why, absolutely not. He says, "As unto the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." The Apostle Paul said in Ephesians 5, verse 25, "Husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it." Well, what did Vashti do when he requested that? What did we learn from that? Yeah, didn't do it. She refused. Did she have a right to do that? Absolutely. But wasn't she supposed to be honoring and respecting him? Why did she do that? She recognized. Is Vashti, is she a member of God's children? Is she God's children here on this occasion? No, she's not. And yet she is exemplifying an attitude and action that shows courage on her part, doesn't it? That's the thing that was amazing to me. Is here's a woman that's not associated with the principles and the commandments of the Jews and God's people, if you will, and their religion. And yet she is exemplifying an attitude of morals and ethics. And as a result, she refuses to be portrayed in a very degrading and vulgar sort of way. Well, how did Xerxes respond to that? Oh, yeah. He banished her, didn't he? He was angry, as Esther 1, 13 through verse 22 says. And his advisors said that if he didn't do something about it, that what's going to happen? That's right. That's right. You know, you're just going, there's going to be a riot here. You know, everybody's going to start, everybody just, you know, they're going to start toting signs, you know. You know, and all these things, they're going to rally. You better nip this in the bud, you know, as Barney Fife would say. You better get it stopped. Esther 1, 17 and 18. "For this deed of the queen shall come abroad unto all women, so that they despise their husbands in their eyes when it shall be reported. The king Ahasuerus commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him, but she came not." Verse 18, "Likewise shall the ladies of Persia and Mede say this day unto all the king's princes which have heard of the deed of the queen, thus shall there arise too much contempt and wrath." So he was advised to divorce her and find him another wife. Well, in verse 10, as I've already mentioned, what was the motivation behind the king doing this anyway? Was he in his right mind? No. His heart was merry with wine. You know, the king had drank to where his self-restraint and decision-making capacity was marred. He simply lost all sense to keep from making a fool of himself, is what he did. You know, you think we read about passages in the Bible that talk about the capacity of the strong drink creating individuals, allowing that by imbibing it, confusing the mind to where individuals are not able to discern between right and wrong. Noah was a God-fearing man, wasn't he? But he sank in debauchery because of what? Because of drink in Genesis 9 and verse 21. You know, you just pick up the newspaper today and you see people that have just done terrible, horrendous things that they wouldn't think about doing otherwise, but because of the influence of the strong drink, they possibly killed somebody or they made a mockery or a fool out of themselves. You know, one of the saddest things, obviously teach a whole lesson on this, but I found not, well, it's been several years ago, whereby that there was a statistic that said that per capita size of region, more alcohol is consumed where? more than any place else in the United States. Where do you think? You just have, now reason. You know, you got a lot of decisions being made there in Washington, D.C. Why is that? Let's go out and have a cocktail, you know. Let's think about this, you know, which would be best. And on go. More per size of region than any other state, city, wherever the case may be, in the United States. Passing our laws that we need to, that we're followed by, you see. Drunkenness ruins a person's reputation, it ruins their health, and it ruins a person's soul. Galatians 5:19, now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envies, murders, drunkenness, revelings. What is that? It's a work of the flesh. And therefore, we ought to have no part nor lot in it, if you will. 1 Peter 4 and 3 as well. Well, Vashti, by this event, was a pretty good example of modesty, wasn't she? Not a worshiper of God. And she would be classified, really, ladies and gentlemen, it's kind of amazing to even say this, but it's true. She would be classified as a heathen queen, wouldn't she? And yet her firm conviction and her example in modesty may serve to shame many of those who claim to be children of God. You know, she distinguished herself, didn't she, on that occasion. And have any of you ever been in a situation whereby that you found that you were uncomfortable because you knew that someone who was not a child of God and who did not join in the same kind of commitments and belief in what you did, what they were doing and what they were saying, and what they were talking about someone down there at your church was absolutely right, but it puts you in an uncomfortable situation? I had that happen one time when I lived down in Kentucky, and the neighbor behind me, you know, he was a likable fellow. He went to the Church of the Nazarene. I learned a lot about the Church of the Nazarene when talking to him, and fortunately he listened to me as well. But evidently the previous preacher that lived there, he didn't talk to people too much and various things. And I just found that to be a very uncomfortable situation because he wasn't behaving right, you know. When it comes to things being in reference to our attire, you know, in Ravenswood they have what they call the Heritage Christian Academy. It's a school that is operated by the Second Baptist Church. And there was a period of time, they don't do it now, but I remember growing up there that all of the girls had to wear culottes. And, you know, so easily was it said that whenever you saw someone who was wearing culottes, you automatically associated them with what? The Second Baptist Church there, you know. They distinguished themselves. When you saw their dress, you knew who they were associated with. I thought, whoa, what a lesson for us, isn't it? And I'm not saying, ladies and gentlemen, that the Second Baptist Church sets the standard on modesty. They don't. But the Bible does. And therefore, we find in 1 Timothy 2 and 9, in like manner also, that women adorn themselves in modest apparel. That people of the world ought to be able to see something distinct about servants of God. That we don't clad ourselves in the ways of the world. And we take note of making sure that our garments are such that we are modest. Whether it be males or females. It's all of our responsibility. I like what Job said over in Job 31 and verse 1. He said, I made a covenant with mine eyes that I should not think upon a maid. And what he did was he made a covenant that he would not lust with his eyes. I've read that before and I thought, boy, I know that is exactly right. But boy, wouldn't it help if the maids would make sure that they dressed themselves to help us, that we would not lust our eyes. And the same thing with the men, isn't it? Well, I preached on that long enough. I want us to know, though, that there's a great example there on the part of Vashti that I think that, you know, for us just to mention that and go on, that we'd probably be missing, because we need to make sure that we're setting the right example. And as servants of God who know the truth, who know about modesty, that people, when they see us, that they'll see that truly we are a peculiar people. You know, also, we talk about courage. Did it take any courage on Vashti's part to do what she did? Well, absolutely. What happened when she did it? She lost her position, didn't she? Lost it. You know. And as a result of that, you know, that's... Might we lose a position or lose some comforts by standing up for what we know is right? We may very well do that. Well, then along comes Ahasuerus, and he begins to regret not having a wife. Down there in Esther 2, verse 1, after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was appeased, he remembered Vashti and what she had done and what was decreed against her. And so there was a contest set forth to select the most beautiful woman in the empire. Candidates were selected from all around the kingdom. In Shushan, there was Mordecai, a Jew, raising his lovely and beautiful cousin. Did he have to do that? Was there a commandment somewhere that said, you have to do that? No, there wasn't. We have as a result that one of the great characteristics about Mordecai was he evidently was a very loving, caring, considerate, kind individual. From the standpoint that when the occasion occurred that he had an opportunity to take care of Esther, he took the responsibility upon to see to it that she was provided for. But together with other beautiful virgins on this occasion, Esther underwent 12 months of preparation to find someone for King Artaxerxes and ultimately to replace Vashti. Esther 2, verses 8 through verse 19. Now, what did she not do at the beginning? What was it, Esther 2 and 20? She didn't tell what? She didn't tell that she was a Jew. Right. Esther 2 and 20, Esther had not yet showed her kindred nor her people as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther did the commandment of Mordecai like as when she was brought up with him. What was Mordecai's and Esther's relationship on this occasion then? What do you see from that? What's your thoughts? Did she respect him? You don't have a right to tell me what to do. Is that what kind of attitude we see out of this? No. She respected him. She respected his wisdom, his charge, his authority here on this occasion for looking out what was best for her. And meanwhile, Mordecai thwarted a plot against Ahasuerus as well. Down in Esther 2, verse 21 through verse 23, in those days, while Mordecai sat in the king's gates, two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh, of those which kept the door, were wroth and sought to lay hand on the king Ahasuerus. And the thing was known to Mordecai, who told it unto the queen, and Esther certified the king thereof in Mordecai's name. And when inquisition was made of the matter, it was found out. Therefore, they were both hanged on a tree. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Some people say, well, now, that wasn't really any Mordecai's business. Well, why not? You know, got rid of that king. And then the whole situation may have been thwarted altogether. You know, didn't one have to fool with all the rest of these things they had to go through? Well, no, they could have got a worse king. You know, that could have been the possibility as well. And that wasn't Mordecai's choosing, neither. What I find here, ladies and gentlemen, is Mordecai is a man who accepted responsibility where'er it was. And as a result, through bravery and courage of his own, and by his confidence and trust in Almighty God, he accepted that responsibility and sought to help. He was one who sought to provide not only for his own, but also when he saw actions that were being exemplified that violated true moral ethics such as this in relationship to Ahasuerus, he couldn't stand and do nothing. He accepted a responsibility and do what he could, and as a result, it paid, didn't it? He was a man of loyalty. Esther 2, 21 through verse 23 also shows that. Circumstances that caused Mordecai to become aware of a plot against the king, he didn't just stand by and say, well, I don't want to get involved in that. That's really not my business. And pass by on the other side, did he? He feared God, and he honored the king. 1 Peter 2 and verse 17, honor all men. Love the brotherhood. Fear God and honor the king. And where in the world has the time gone? Boy, here we are, aren't we? We better hurry up and get to Esther, hadn't we? Well, there's a part of this that says the extermination of the Jews is planned. Well, let's do some quick so we can get to Esther here. Well, why were the Jews going to be exterminated? What caused that? Yeah. Haman was put in a position whereby that it was expected that those who recognized his position would do, as been mentioned, bow down to him. Mordecai refused to do that. Well, evidently along the way, Mordecai has seen whereby that this man wasn't deserving or didn't deserve to receive that kind of honor along the way. And as a result, Haman didn't take that too lightly, did he? And so as a result, he orders that Jews be killed on the complete extermination of the Jews is planned. Esther 3 and 1, after these things, did King Ahasuerus promote Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, and advanced him and set his seat above the princes that were with him. Verse 2, and all the king's servants that were in the king's gate bowed and reverenced Haman, for the king had so commanded concerning him. But Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence. Then the king's servants which were in the king's gate said unto Mordecai, why transgressest thou the king's commandment? Now it came to pass when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened not unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath. Wrath is anger exploding, if you will. It's at the internal explosion. So in Esther chapter 3, verse 6 through verse 15, we find that Haman then receives permission from Ahasuerus to kill the Jews the 13th of Adar. And what did Mordecai do? He goes and he mourns over this. He mourns in sackcloth. He mourns in ashes at the king's gate. Esther 4, verse 1 through 3. Well, Esther in turn hears of her cousin and learns of Haman's plan to kill the Jews. In Esther 4, verses 4 through 9. And Mordecai convinces Esther to approach the king at the great risk to her own life. And what did he want Esther to do? What did he want her to do? We read it, didn't we? Yes. Down there in verse 14, for if thou altogether, Esther 4, for if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall there enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? He is reminding her that she is in a position of influence. But what she has to do is just not realize that, but she has to practice what influence she had. She has an opportunity to speak now in behalf of God's people. Well, obviously we see several traits here on the part of Mordecai. Was this man a man who loved God's people? Absolutely he did, didn't he? Are we to love one another? We are, aren't we? We love one another with brotherly love, as the Bible says, and teaches us that if a brother have need, we take care of them. We're concerned. We weep with those that weep, and we rejoice with those that rejoice. And so we have a care and a concern. And if you and I learned of someone who had a plot to harm one of our brothers and sisters in Christ, what would my responsibility to be? Sit back and say, well, that's really not my business. I don't want to get involved in their business. But Mordecai didn't do that. Did Esther do anything about it after Mordecai gave her the charge? Yeah. We find here that she did in behalf of the people. Esther accepted the challenge to fit into God's plan. She was convinced by Mordecai's reasoning and agreed down in Esther 4 and in verse 16. Well, verse 15, then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan and fast ye for me and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. Wow. If that's not courage, I don't know what is, you know. If I perish, I perish. Now, is she saying that just to sound like some kind of a triumphant person, or could that really have happened? That really could have happened, couldn't it? Absolutely. And so as a result, on this occasion, she accepted the challenge to fit into God's plan, and she was convinced. And she set down one condition, and they fasted. What was the reason for the fast? Think about that. 3 days and three nights. What's the reason for that? Humility, absolutely, many times. You ever fasted? Don't tell me. God said, don't tell me. He said, if you fast, you go ahead and do it, but you don't tell somebody else, do you? It's what it said in the Sermon on the Mount. Fasting has to do, you know, how many times have you ever been in a situation where you were so involved? Maybe, you know, well, for example, for me, this class, the time I looked up there, whoa, the time is gone. And you've been something like that, you've been studying or something like that, and you looked at it, whoa, I completely missed supper. Why? Because you were focused and attention in something that was important that you didn't even think about the time. Now, obviously, here was a fast that was proclaimed among those. But these people wanted to make sure that their minds, and Esther wanted to make sure that their minds were just and right, her mind was just and right in reference to the event that was to occur, realizing the weight that was upon her. Because if she wasn't successful in deterring what had been committed, what was going to happen? Yes. Jews would be children of God exterminated. Now, how would you like to wear that on your shoulder? You know, I think I'd be doing some fasting too and praying as well. But then we find that as a result, what happened? Did she succeed? Absolutely. Well, Haman, what happened to Haman? Yeah, he had built gallows for whom? For himself? No, for Mordecai. What he built them for him? Just because? Yeah, he didn't like him, you know. Well, it all started back when. He wouldn't bow down to him, would he? And so as a result, we see, and then what happened, though? Did Haman get to hang his gallows on the wall as a memorial of the death of Mordecai? What happened? Yeah. Esther, you find here is, we find that Haman ends up being killed, or she hung in the very gallows that he had built for Mordecai. And as a result of that, Esther is given Haman's house, Mordecai is promoted, and the plan to save the Jews is made. Esther 8 and verses 1 through 17. Now all that happened just by accident, didn't it? Go like this. You know. No, it didn't. There's that providence of God. Now, Esther, let's remember these things. This will be a fitting conclusion. In Esther chapter 2 and verse 7, we learn that she was a lovely and beautiful person. She was lovely on the outside, but I offer to you, she was lovely and more beautiful on the inside, wasn't she? Many a person has been known for years because of good deeds that they have done, only to have it said later on, I can't remember what he looked like, but I sure do remember what he did. Remember that in our lives. Esther is one. Do we know what Esther looked like? She was beautiful, but do you really know what she looked like? No, I don't. But we see her beauty in her action. The life of Esther shows that she was a beautiful lady inside as well. She pleased Haggai, who advanced her to the best place in Esther 2, verse 8 and 9. She underwent 11 months of preparation for beautifying women in Esther 2 and verse 12. She obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her in Esther 2 and verse 15. She was loved by Ahasuerus above all women, Esther 2, verse 16 and 17. She was a virgin up to her selection by the king. Unfortunately, a rarity in today's society. She honored Mordecai as her surrogate father. And I tell you what, there are those that are in situations that, you know, that she could have very well rebelled against him with the old phrase that said many times, you're not my father, you can't tell me what to do. But I don't see that out of her, do I? Do you? It took great courage and commitment on her part to live even a life in devotion unto listening to Mordecai. And also in conclusion, she manifested faith in God's providence. She accepted Mordecai's view that her position might be providential. And she called upon others to fast with her, being willing to risk everything if necessary. And as a result, we truly see a woman that exemplified great courage. Well, again, time just flew by, and hopefully we've learned lessons not only from Esther, but the others as well, that we can take with us, and we can learn to have the kind of character in our lives that God expects us to have. Thank you for your attention and participation.